I thought it was a great first debate. I think Obama's performance was a little bit lackluster.
I wasn't very impressed with Obama, and I'm a Democrat.
I thought Romney had a very smug attitude, which kind of turned me off.
My overall impression was that Obama's out of practice.
It seemed like he was playing defense instead of offense.
I don't know what was going on with his performance. It was, I feel that he was definitely putting a good foot forward, but he was definitely lacking in the enthusiasm that he generally has.
Romney was kind of smiling and ready to go and anxious to speak, and then whenever Romney was speaking, the president was kind of like, kind of had the scowl on his face and was, you know, sort of negative to it, like, all right, is he going to be done talking so I can get my words in, sort of deal. So
I wanted to hear about more about the deficit and what they thought about education, and they just kept going back to taxes.
A couple of times I was surprised by the the tone the president had. He kind of, like, it didn't seem like maybe he was stumbling on his words, or I think he was just overthinking what he was going to say a little too much. Like he should have been a little bit more prepared.
So as my son would say, he's 11, he would say, Romney wins on style points, Obama wins on facts.
And there was no winning as far as I could see. They both are very good debaters, and they both made good points. Whether you believed the rhetoric, it's another story.
I would say Romney must have won that.
He did a very good job last night. He was extremely articulate. It seemed like he didn't miss a beat.
I don't think it swayed my vote. I think it solidified it a bit. Yeah, definitely.
I've been kind of undecided, you know, this entire year, and it's kind of the decision has been changing, evolving over time as the campaign has. But so we'll see, I guess.
Can I introduce you to Maggie Hassan? This is Robert Field, attorney here in town.
Hi, nice to see you.
Maggie Hassan is working the room. She's shaking hands with members of the Seacoast's financial industry at the largest Rotary Club in New England. She's 54 and running for governor on a platform of investment in education and job training and healthcare expansion. Before she begins yet another stump speech, the Rotarians recite the Pledge of Allegiance, then sing together. She's not a bad singer, Maggie Hassan. She says she sang in church and school choirs from childhood through her college years at Brown University. Hassan grew up in Lincoln, Massachusetts, a well-to-do suburb of Boston. Her father was a professor at MIT. Later, he worked as the Undersecretary for Housing and Urban Development under Lyndon B. Johnson. Sue Krabiel went to Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School with Hassan. When Krabiel's parents moved to Minnesota during her senior year, she moved in with the Hassan family.
They had a wonderful old New England house in Lincoln at the top of the hill that had this old grass tennis court in the back.
Dinner time at the Hassan family, Krabiel says, was kind of intimidating. She says they were super smart and really political.
I mean, there were signed pictures from JFK in the study and things like that. And we'd sit at this dinner table and have conversations about, like, current events and major right and wrong in the world kind of issues.
Hassan says her first political memory was collating mailers for the League of Women Voters as a young girl. And Hassan says she was shaped by conversations with her parents at mealtime.
My parents always wanted to hear from everybody.
All three siblings would bring friends over, not to mention her father's colleagues and mother's friends.
And so it just wasn't unusual for us to have a whole lot of voices at the table.
For the last 24 years, Maggie Hassan has lived in houses owned by Phillips Exeter Academy, where her husband is the principal. The house they live in now looks grand from the outside. Inside, it's decorated pretty modestly.
Let me introduce you around. This is my husband, Tom.
Hi, Meg. Nice to meet you.
This is Liz Halliday.
Hi, nice to meet you.
I might as well be daughter, lives here and helps with Ben.
Hassan's family is gathered around the kitchen eating leftovers. There's a funny-shaped island in the middle of the room.
The counter was designed so that Ben's wheelchair can pull up at this level so we can all sit around here with Ben.
Hassan's son Ben is listening to the radio in a bedroom next to the kitchen. He's 24 and has cerebral palsy.
But Ben, it's Call Me Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wait, it's Call Me Maybe. A cultural reference that, Ben, I actually do know. Just saying. And I just wanted you to meet Ben, and he's actually using his hand right now to say hello. He can understand everything but can't speak.
A lot of voters in New Hampshire know Ben's story because Hassan talks about him frequently on the campaign trail.
The thing I want to talk to you about today blends
a little bit of my experience as a state senator with my much more important experience as a mom.
In the 90s, Hassan, then a corporate attorney for Brigham and Women's Hospital, began advocating for disabled people and their families, not just on the seacoast where she lived, but in Concord as well.
When Congressman Frank Ginta goes out knocking on the doors of Independence in Manchester, his political backyard, most everybody knows who he is.
Good morning.
Hey, Congressman Ginta. Hey.
How are you Sorry doing?
Hey, Gracie, you want to meet a congressman? This is Congressman Ginta. Hey, Hi. How are you doing?
But that doesn't necessarily mean that every door that opens has a smiling supporter on the other side, which is the case with Gus Emick.
Unfortunately, I have to say this. I'm voting for your opponent because, not it's not as much about you as personally as about the Republican Congress in general. So
Emick's frustration with the gridlock in Congress is what Democrats are banking on this election season, and Carol Shea Porter's campaign is no exception. The tactic so far has been to call him extreme and obstructionist, mostly by linking him to the Tea Party.
Tea Party Congressman Frank Ginta voted for billions in cuts to veterans programs.
As a voice for the Tea Party, Congressman Frank Ginta voted to gut the program that's helped our families for almost 50 years.
But even as the Shea Porter campaign tries to tie him to the House of Representatives in voters' minds, the Ginta campaign may be trying to obscure what has traditionally been an advantage, incumbency.
This is Frank Ginta, candidate for Congress, running against Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter. I'm running to end the broken culture of Washington, improve our economy, and get Granite Staters back to work.
That was a robocall that the Ginta campaign ran in August and again just a few weeks ago. There's nothing inaccurate about Ginta calling himself candidate Frank Ginta and his opponent, Congresswoman Shea Porter. But an uninformed voter listening to that call might think that Ginta was the challenger and not the other way around. UNH professor Dante Scala says that's the point.
You know, if a congressman could get away with running against Congress, this would certainly be the year to try and do that, given how very unpopular Congress is these days.
Not that this is a new technique. Scala notes in 2008, when Shea Porter was an incumbent running against Jeb Bradley, who she had unseated 2 years before, a mailer from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee walked the same fine line.
That mail, if you looked at it, and that alone, you would have thought Jeb Bradley was the incumbent in the district.
The first congressional district covers most of the eastern half of the state. It stretches from the seacoast to Jackson and North Conway and includes cities like Manchester, Portsmouth, Laconia, and Rochester. Over the past decade, it has developed into a pure swing district. It's one of only a handful in the country that has an even partisan voting index. That means its demographics predict that it will swing with the national trends this election. And the two candidates running here fit pretty neatly into the national narrative of a deep fissure between the left and right. For example, though Ginta hasn't been so enthusiastic about the Tea Party this election, they were certainly key in pushing him into office last time around. Here he is at a Tea Party rally in 2009.
This is America. This is grassroots effort at its finest. You all should be congratulated for standing up for your values, your rights, and the responsibility that we all have as Americans to tell our leaders, stop spending our money.
Yeah! Ginta has been pretty representative of this year's freshman class of legislators. He was staunchly in favor of the Ryan budget and for repealing the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. He also signed Grover Norquist's Taxpayer Protection Pledge, vowing to never raise taxes or eliminate deductions. He climbed through the conservative political ranks in New Hampshire as state representative, as a staffer for Jeb Bradley, and as mayor of Manchester, earning a reputation as a tax fighter as he did. His politics and his run for Congress coincided perfectly with the national trend.
This is Morning Edition. I'm Rick Hanley. Jobs and the economy continue to dominate on the campaign trail from the national to the local level, but government-run health care programs like Medicaid and Medicare are getting their fair share of attention. Major changes to both programs are potentially on the horizon. With just over a week to go until the election, NHPR's health reporter Todd Bookman joins us to give an overview of what's at stake for Granite State voters. Welcome, Todd.
Good to see you, Rick.
So in the gubernatorial race, both Ovadha Montaigne and Maggie Hassan have been talking a fair bit about Medicare and Medicaid. So remind us, what's the difference between the two programs?
Well, to sum up thousands of pages of policy in two sentences, Medicare is the federally managed health care program for Americans over 65. Medicaid is a partnership between the states and the federal government. It covers poor kids, pregnant moms, and disabled people, though eligibility does vary state by state.
Okay, so now that we got those two programs straight, what are the candidates sparring over?
The big issue for New Hampshire right now is Medicaid and whether or not to expand eligibility to include low-income adults who don't have children. So the Supreme Court ruled states must have that choice in the big healthcare decision last summer. And Democrat Maggie Hassan wants to expand the program. That would give about 36,000 more people health insurance, and that's on top of the 132,000 already enrolled.
So what's her opponent Ovid LaMontagne saying?
Republican Ovid LaMontagne is opposed to expansion. He says he'd rather push the federal government to block grant money to the state and craft what he calls a New Hampshire solution. Of course, at the end of the day, it's really the state legislature that will make the decision, and the current makeup is not in support of expansion.
Now, what's the estimated price tag of expansion?
So the federal government will cover 100% of the costs of Medicaid expansion for the first 3 years, and that slowly phases down to 90% by 2020. And the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute estimates that the state would have to contribute about $129 million over that time. A little less than half of that would be on coverage for those newly eligible adults. And because of the mandate that all people must buy health insurance starting in 2014, a lot of people who are currently eligible for Medicaid are also likely to apply. This is sometimes called the Woodwork effect. The Affordable Care Act won't cover 100% of the costs for those people, so the state would be on the hook for roughly half the bill. And then there are some increased administrative costs with running a bigger program.
And what about Medicare? We've seen that issue on the campaign trail as well.
Right. So Medicare is an entitlement program and a huge line on the federal budget. The presidential candidates have gone back and forth over reforms. Democrats, including President Obama, attack the Paul Ryan budget, which in their words turns Medicare into a voucher program that will cost seniors. Governor Romney calls it a premium support system that would give seniors a choice in their coverage. The Republicans, of course, attack the president's health care law, saying it cuts $716 billion in funding from Medicare to pay for Obamacare. Those cuts would be made to insurance companies and hospitals, though, not to benefits, and is the same amount in spending reductions that Paul Ryan's plan calls for.
And what about the local races? What are our candidates saying here in the Granite State?
Our congressional races follow a really similar pattern. Democrats Annie Custer and Carol Shea Porter, they stand by the president's law. Republicans Frank Ginta, Charlie Bass, they both voted for the Paul Ryan plan. Ginta points out that without any changes to the program, Medicare will become insolvent. And in the middle of all this are the 230,000 Granite Staters who are currently covered by Medicare.
Okay. Todd, thanks for your time. Todd Bookman, health reporter here on NHPR.
Thank you, Rick.
And you can find more of NHPR's election coverage at our website, nhpr.org.
When you have a pro-choice Republican running against a pro-choice Democrat, abortion doesn't seem like an obvious lightning rod issue. But that's the situation in New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District, where Democrat Ann McLean Custer is trying to unseat Republican Charlie Bass.
Now, we all remember Charlie as a good guy. And in fact, in 2001, 2004, and 2005, NARAL Pro-Choice America even rated him as 100% pro-choice. But things have changed.
Catherine Cavanaugh sits on the board of New Hampshire NARAL. The group endorsed Ann McLean Custer, who lobbied professionally for them. Other abortion rights groups, like the National Organization for Women and Emily's List, have also endorsed Custer. At a recent news conference, Cavanaugh called Bass out on his record.
Charlie Bass turned his back on women. He voted to defund the entire Title X family planning program, and he voted to allow states to deny contraceptive coverage.
NARAL has it wrong.
Bass defends his record, but taken as a whole, it's nuanced. He sided with NARAL on half the votes the group scored last year. But he did vote with his entire party on the controversial House Resolution 358, which prohibited federal money from paying for any health care plan that includes abortion coverage. NARAL says it would also allow hospitals with moral objections to deny women abortions, even if the mother's life is in danger. Bass argues his fundamental views on abortion are clear, and his record proves it.
I have been a consistent supporter of upholding the Roe v. Wade decision, which is the foundation of this debate, and also federal funding for contraceptive services.
That federal funding is Title X. Under the program, healthcare providers make contraception, cervical cancer screenings, and mammograms available to low-income women. The most well-known provider is Planned Parenthood, and Bass voted against defunding Planned Parenthood this term, just one of seven Republicans to do so. But his opponent, Ann McLean Custer, points to other votes.
Congressman Bass has voted twice now for the Ryan budget that is going to eliminate family planning funding. It's going to lead to the closure of Planned Parenthood clinics all across this country and certainly all across this state.
But that's not enough to put Planned Parenthood of Northern New England into the Custer column.
Both candidates support the ability of Planned Parenthood health centers to provide a full range of reproductive health services.
That's Jennifer Frizzell of Planned Parenthood. She says they aren't endorsing anyone in this race. The vast majority of the time, most congressmen of both parties vote with party leadership. But women's health issues are one area in which Bass doesn't always toe the Republican line, a point he makes in television ads.
I happen to believe that women should have a right to contraception, that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land and it should be upheld. That's not the way most of my Republican colleagues feel.
UNH political scientist Andy Smith says it's not surprising Bass would take this tack in the Democratic-leaning 2nd District.
The thing about New Hampshire is that it's one of the least religious states in the country. The religious overtones to politics just don't exist here, which just causes a problem for Republicans because the more moderate Rockefeller Republicans, in a sense, have to run away from their party's national image.
Smith also notes that presidential races drive turnout. So congressmen are often elected or ousted based on voters' presidential picks rather than their own merits. Abortion and contraception are big issues at the top of the ticket. And there, the contrast between pro-life Mitt Romney and pro-choice Barack Obama is stark. For NHPR News, I'm Amanda Loader.
A joke about being New Hampshire Speaker of the House is that you get a parking spot, a $125 annual salary, and the chance to bang a gavel.
House come to order. The question for the House.
But when Bill O'Brien grabbed the position in 2010, he took an important but largely under-the-radar position into the spotlight.
It's been all about O'Brien.
Dante Scala is a political scientist at UNH.
For better or worse, O'Brien became the center of gravity in the New Hampshire legislature and the face of the New Hampshire legislature in a way that past speakers rarely are.
And O'Brien has been a lightning rod for conflict. Here's the speaker mixing it up with Manchester Republican Steve Valancourt on the House floor.
You know, Representative, I've never seen anything in any report on Hutchinspieler either, but you continue to allude to it in your debates. We'll allow
Mr.
this
Speaker,
to...
point of order. You just ruled
you just
that you can only
the
speak if it's in the committee report.
You will bring
There's
yourself
nothing
to
in the committee report.
The Sergeant at Arms to bring Representative Valancourt to order.
Are you going to treat everybody fairly or not?
Representative Valancourt, another outburst like that, you'll be removed from the hall.
The 61-year-old attorney from Mount Vernon is finishing up his third term in Concord. Leading up to the elections 2 years ago, O'Brien recruited other conservative candidates to run for the House. When many were elected in a GOP landslide, they helped O'Brien win the speakership.
O'Brien has seen himself as this warrior for conservative ideology. He was not a go-along, to-get-along type of speaker. He was on a mission.
That mission started with a controversial budget that slashed state spending across the board. The cuts were part of O'Brien's vision for the role of government. He's been critical of Democratic Governor John Lynch for not taking on the big challenges facing New Hampshire.
There's a benefit politically in always looking for the small issues. Governor Lynch has always been a person who turns to the small issues.
But after 8 years in office, Lynch remains overwhelmingly popular. The legislature under O'Brien doesn't rate nearly as well. In fact, a UNH Survey Center poll rated the GOP legislature one of the state's biggest problems. Inside the statehouse, O'Brien's also had his detractors. Democrats label him a tyrant, and a fellow Republican even sought legislation to ban bullying in the statehouse after a heated encounter with the speaker. Arm twisting, of course, is nothing new in politics, but Republican Donna Sitek, who served as New Hampshire Speaker in the late 90s, says that tactic can only go so far.
If you can't win them with the power of your idea or their sense of loyalty to the party, you've lost the battle.
O'Brien's reputation for tough tactics isn't new. Colleagues on the Mount Vernon School Board, where he served before coming to Concord, say O'Brien always played to win.
I actually looked at most of our school board meetings as almost a chess match.
Peter King was board chair at the time. He says O'Brien was tactical, often bringing up last-minute motions well after the public had left marathon sessions.
At one point, he proposed a motion to unfund our special education program because he was adamant that it's an unfunded mandate, we shouldn't have to pay for it. And my response was, but Bill, we're going to end up in front of the Supreme Court if we do that. And he looked at me and said, that would please me, Peter.
It would please Democrats to remove the speaker from office. David Woodbury is trying to do just that, running against O'Brien in his House race.
Let's face it, Speaker O'Brien has loads of negatives out there. I'm sure he has some strong followers and strong supporters, but there are plenty of people out there who are disenchanted with him, and that's going to be a struggle for him.
It may not be much of a struggle, though. The district is Republican-leaning, and O'Brien certainly has name recognition. That name is showing up in races all across the ticket.
We can continue bringing people together to move New Hampshire forward, or we can go in the direction of Speaker Bill O'Brien and the current legislature.
That's Democratic gubernatorial candidate Maggie Hassan. She's made O'Brien as much of a political target as her actual opponent, Ovid Lamontagne. It's a sign of just how much the New Hampshire political world swirls around the speaker right now. That may change after Tuesday. If Republicans don't win solid majorities, Bill O'Brien's days as speaker may be numbered. But as his allies and his opponents will both tell you, he's not the sort to go down without a fight. For NHPR News, I'm Todd Bookman.
While President Obama stumped in Concord, a band of prominent Republicans traveled the state on behalf of Mitt Romney and gubernatorial candidate Ovid Lamontagne. Senators John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and Kelly Ayotte worked GOP voters, as did former Governor John Sununu, former Labor Secretary Elaine Chao, and Cindy McCain. When they arrived at McKenna's restaurant in New London, supporters met them with cheers. It was then onto a group sing-along of America the Beautiful. But the singing soon gave way to a sustained indictment of President Obama's record. John Sununu led the charge.
I have never seen anybody so inexperienced, so clumsy, so inept, so incompetent, so devious and so misserving of this country as the president we have there now. He has to go. We need Mitt Romney. Yeah.
Kelly Ayotte told the crowd that every vote will count Tuesday and urged supporters to give it their all.
So let's not leave anything behind between now and Tuesday. You are the ones that are going to make the difference.
It's a crucial time for both campaigns in battleground states around the country. And Senator McCain, who twice won the presidential primary here, hoped New Hampshire might be good to him one more time.
Well, it's one of the most important states, obviously. We think it's very close. And I am somewhat known here in the state. And so we know it all comes down to turnout.
One reason why McCain did well here is that he appealed to independent voters as well as core Republicans. Ovid Lamontagne will need such voters to pull out a win Tuesday. He worked the room doggedly before and after the others arrived, and he stressed the cause was bigger than any single race.
Well, I'm here today to connect with the people in the New London area and to remind them about the importance of the election all the way up and down the ballot. And that's not just about the presidential election, it's a very important governor's race.
Lamontagne says he plans to spend the waning hours of this election campaigning at small restaurants and corner stores, looking for what he called spontaneous interactions.
Ovid, my wife, Loa here. Too much good a picture, yeah.
Oh, we'll have to get
and votes. For NHPR News, I'm Sarah Ashworth in New London.
Maggie Hassan's nearly 13-point win ended this race far earlier than many expected and made her the second woman ever elected to New Hampshire's corner office.
Thank you to the people of New Hampshire for the trust you have placed in me. I will not let you down.
Hassan's win came on a night when Democrats performed well up and down the ballot. in no small part due to her strong performance. And while the former state Senate Majority Leader is clearly savoring her party's big night, she also told supporters that divided government needn't be a prelude to gridlock in Concord.
We should see this not as an obstacle, but as an opportunity to move beyond the partisan divide.
Republican Ovid LaMontagne, meanwhile, was downcast in defeat. The loss was the Manchester attorney's fourth in four tries at elective office. It clearly stung. In brief remarks to a sparse crowd of supporters, LaMontagne blamed his loss on attack ads that labeled him as extreme on abortion and education.
It wasn't just a negative attack against me. It was a negative attack against our entire team, which includes you. New Hampshire's a better state than that.
Top Democrats, though, saw the election as affirmation of a strategy that helped Hassan romp over a better-known candidate. Hassan carried many Democratic strongholds by near 2-to-1 margins and did well in GOP-leaning towns, too, carrying Merrimack and Milford, for example. Former State Party Chair Kathy Sullivan says Hassan's opposition to broad-based taxes and tolerant approach on social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage is a time-tested approach.
I mean, we saw this in 1996. We saw it in 2004, that when it comes to trusting a governor on issues involving the economy and what they like to call social issues, people trust Democrats in New Hampshire now.
Democrats have now won 8 of the last 9 governor's races and won the majority of those with relative ease. For NHPR News, I'm Josh Rogers.
Lead. It's still early, but it's a lead.
Well, I think, Laura, that folks are probably thinking this is a bit premature to call anything yet. There are certainly a couple of typically Republican towns that have been called early for Carol Shea Porter's, Seabrook and Belmont, for example, which both in 2008 and 2010 went to Shea Porter, have been called, or went to Ginta, have been called for Shea Porter this time around. So, you know, it's too soon to say anything. With 2% reporting, really the numbers aren't indicative of much. So, you know, folks are relatively relaxed. People are having dinner, chatting. The room is pretty quiet still. You know, we've probably got about a dozen or 18 people in here. So certainly it's not a mob scene. And I know that there's been a lot of talk of how slow the polls have been in Manchester, how long the lines were, how long it's going to be before we start getting results from there. So really, people are just sort of biding their time. There's no real excitement or disappointment yet.
And looking at the state of New Hampshire, or this district of New Hampshire, again, in the eastern half of the state, it seemed like, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, that Ms. Shea Porter's base of support was more on the seacoast and Mr. Ginta's was more in Manchester.
Absolutely. And you know, if we look at the past two elections, they're perhaps not particularly indicative of much, having been wave elections. In 2008, of course, Carol Shea Porter was bolstered by the candidacy of Barack Obama, and Frank Ginta in 2010 was sort of swept in with the Tea Party wave. So it's tough to say how much we can pull from those elections. But if you look at them, really, Carol Shea Porter in 2008 took all of the urban centers and didn't do well in the towns. And then in 2010, she held on to a few of the cities, but, you know, lost Manchester, lost Rochester, lost Laconia, and was further eroded in the town. So really, for her to do well tonight, she has to do well in the big cities and make some gains in the small towns. And as I said, we've seen some early indications that she might be doing that. Towns like Belmont and Seabrook that never have gone Republican or have not gone Republican in the past two election cycles have been called for her.
Wow. Well, and just stepping back for just a minute, Sam, if you could, describe this campaign for us. You've been covering it closely for the 1st Congressional District. It's been not just about the issues. It's been kind of personal between these two candidates.
It has been personal. I think most folks who watch this race and know these candidates and see how they interact, they agree that, you know, chances are there's no love lost between them. They don't seem to particularly want to hang out on Sunday nights and have dinner together. So it has been very personal. The debates have been quite heated. Actually, Ginta at one point told me that he thought the ads were not as strong as they were last time around, and that you know, the attacks were not as harsh as they were before. But you know, it's certainly in the debates, when you get them in the same room, the tension does tend to rise.
You know, we talked earlier, Sam, about the unprecedented, I would say, involvement of national groups in New Hampshire's governor's race.